Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought Bite-Sized. And in this bite-sized session, we talk about integrated development environments, or IDEs for short. And in the second half of this recording, you hear from Joaquin from the Southern Methodist University in the US about how he uses IDEs in his work. But first, I'd like to share my own experiences with code development tools and why we should talk about IDEs in the first place. When I started coding, back in the days, we used to work on central computers called mainframes and had a keyboard and a video terminal at our disposal. In my case, the VT420 from Digital Equipment, if anybody is still remembering that. It was a great terminal at the time, but writing a program meant to work entirely within a text editor, running commands outside it from the command line. There was simply no graphical user interface. All the things that you need to do to write code, that is, compile, test, run, deploy, consisted of separate steps. There were, however, tools that made our lives a little bit easier, and one of the powerful editors we used in those days were either, for instance, Vim and Emacs. They're highly configurable and can integrate some of the tasks into the tool. Personally, I think they're pretty cool, and I'm pleased they're still in use. I used Emacs in my development days quite a bit, and then later on X Windows, if anybody remembers that, there was a version called X Emacs. Joaquin will tell you a little bit about Vim later on, or rather its more modern incarnation called NeoVim. Of course, since the heady days of mainframe computing and VT100 terminals, we've moved on, and nowadays, whether you are starting with programming or are an experienced engineer already, chances are you'd be working in a modern IDE that integrates all of the functionalities I just mentioned, and some. When it comes to the history of IDEs, I tried to look up where it all started and found a couple of hints. One points to Turbo Pascal, Pascal being a programming language, and another one to Visual Basic and Delphi, for which development tools were created that could be considered as an IDE, or at least the beginning of an IDE. So what's an IDE anyway? Well, I guess the clue's in the name. IDEs integrate a set of different tools you usually need to build an application. And not just build, but also test, run, document, and deploy it. In short, IDEs comprise a set of functions that typically include syntax highlighting and code completion, but also code suggestions, browsing APIs and library documentation, automatic documentation, integration with version control systems, file management, setting up and running of tests, and debugging, and deploying of code to code repositories. Depending on the IDE you are or will be using, the list of functions and features is usually a lot longer. So why have IDEs become so popular and widely used? At the beginning of this episode, I spoke about my own engineering experience on text-based terminals and editors. There's a lot of context switching between different tools and the steps you'd need to take to create and deploy code, not to mention test and run it. And at first, that may not sound very much. But when you're in the flow of developing code, you'd want to quickly run checks and see if stuff works as you want it. Which means you'll be doing that a lot. Having to switch between tasks and tools becomes a time-consuming and cumbersome burden that's going to lose you a lot of valuable time. Instant feedback and assessment of your code is another important aspect. We all know how easy it is to introduce a typo, or use a variable we haven't declared yet, or reference a function from a library we forgot to import. Getting a visual warning or error feedback helps you avoid introducing syntax errors in the first place. And I also highly recommend you do not ignore warnings, as they usually indicate problems with your code that might bite you later on. In short, avoiding mistakes is far better than having to spend time removing them later on, and IDEs help you accomplish that. I guess that IDEs started off being language-specific, and some of the IDEs are mainly centered around particular technology stacks. So take, for instance, Xcode from Apple, which runs, as the name suggests, on Macs. In principle, you could use it to develop C and C++ applications or applications in other languages, But mostly, you'd be using it to develop code in Swift for the Mac, iPhone, iPad, or other devices. Likewise, IntelliJ from the company JetBrains, which focuses on Java and Kotlin. The same company also provides an IDE for Python, funnily enough, called PyCharm. As with IntelliJ, PyCharm is available as a community edition for free, but the license may require you to use the paid version in order to distribute your apps and libraries. And these tools are great, but as great as they are, modern engineering usually encompasses a whole range of different technologies and multiple languages. Just think of web apps, for instance, and what's involved there. You'd have HTML, Java or TypeScript, CSS for the front-end or possibly Python, and then you have the back-end, possibly also Python but also something else. Maybe you do a bit of Terraform for infrastructure, and maybe you do some Docker for containerization. Then you have your test scripts you want to run, and finally, you want to create pull requests for your GitHub repository. Maybe you even want to pair program live with someone else. And all of that means that the demands on IDEs has increased considerably. Luckily, there are a few out there that offer this level of flexibility. Listeners who took part in the live bite-sized RSE session with Jeremy and Steve on the subject will have used Visual Studio Code, and so I'd like to add a few words about this IDE in particular. Visual Studio Code is from Microsoft, as you probably know. In fact, if you've been around for a while, you'll remember Visual Studio as the development environment for all of your Windows programming. There still is a Visual Studio IDE available, a payable version that is. And in contrast, Visual Studio Code, or VS Code for short, is freely available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's free for private and commercial use, by the way. It's built on open source software. Some claim that it's itself open source, but that's a view not shared by everybody, and I included a link about that discussion in the episode notes. VS Code is built using the Electron's JavaScript framework, or Electron.js for short. The framework allows you to build desktop applications using a similar technology stack as web apps. In short, you can develop an application using JavaScript, TypeScript, CSS, HTML, etc. You can look up the GitHub repo for VS Code in the episode notes. Which might explain why VS Code is so highly flexible. This flexibility is based on the concepts of extensions. An extension is a form of plugin that you install in VS Code itself. If you look at the left navigation bar, where you see a block of three squares and a single fourth one hovering right above it, well, that's your extension setting tool right there. Out of the box, Visual Studio Code, or VS Code, comes with a limited number of extensions, and even within the installed extensions, not all of the available features are enabled. Which is another way of saying that you need to spend some time adjusting it to what you need and what you want from an IDE. If you're doing Python, then for sure you'll need the Python extension if it isn't installed already. This extension offers IntelliSense, a code completion and suggestion tool, linting, testing, debugging, and a lot more. The episode notes have a video link for a setup of VS Code for Python if you're interested. Choosing an IDE is very personal, which might explain the almost religious attachment some developers might feel about their development environment. This may mean that Visual Studio Code may not be for you. And luckily, there are plenty of other IDEs about. I already mentioned PyCharm, for instance. In addition to that, you find Spider being mentioned, particularly for those working in data science. Jupyter and Jupyter Notebooks can also be considered as IDEs. For instance, they offer syntax highlighting and instant feedback. You can run through the program by stepping through, and other goodies. And let's not forget that the Python distribution itself comes with an editor called IDLE, though, to be honest, I haven't met anyone using it. Which brings me to the conversation with Joaquin. He mentions a number of IDEs I haven't mentioned that you may find interesting. The landscape of IDEs is forever evolving. He also reminds us that you need to spend some time setting up and configuring an IDE so it works for you. So please don't get frustrated if it doesn't work for you just out of the box. The time you spend setting it up is time well spent. And here now my conversation with Joaquin. Hello, Joaquin. Very nice to meet you today. Maybe you can quickly introduce yourself.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me first. My name is Joaquin, and I'm a data scientist working in the East Coast. I'm currently finishing the last semester of my master's program in data science. I specialize in working in the domain of machine learning with prosthetics. So, you know, having to deal with creating like algorithms that classify gaits and movements that can be applied in active prostheses.
When you're doing data science, I assume you're doing a lot of Python code, aren't you?
Yes, mostly. I mean, for the reasons that Python is just has created the community due to its like ease of use and just functionality, that a lot of the tools that data scientists use are in the Python language. You know, I'm broadening my field as far as being a polyglot and applying it to data science, but Python still definitely remains the king in that.
Exactly. Which university are you at? You said you're in the East Coast, the US.
So. Right, yeah. So I live in the East Coast, but my program is through SMU in Dallas, Southern Methodist University.
All right. Okay. Well, let's get started. So IDEs, why should people use integrated desktop environments in the first place?
That question's like a little bit loaded just because our definition of an IDE has entered a bit of a gray area, I believe, because I mean, there's a difference between like an IDE and a text editor, at least in the traditional sense. But now as text editors have gotten more functions, it seems like they are like pretty much in line with IDEs. So I guess it depends what kind of definition are you using, whether you're talking about VS Code or using NVIM, NeoVim, or using like PyCharm. All these functions that are added on top of just the text editor basic abilities allow us to just make our job so much easier, right? Whether just formatting our code, testing it immediately, creating environments to run it in multiple different like formats and things like that. Yeah, the IDE is like our weapon of choice for that.
Which one have you been using in the past and which one are you using now?
Yeah, so I started both with PyCharm and VS Code. You know, PyCharm, it's not free. That's one of like its main considerations when you're weighing whether to go with one or the other. It's not free, but it is free for students while you are a student. So I was able to test it out quite a bit. And, you know, I would say like definitely like out of the box, it was the most like packed with features and just like ready to go. It's very powerful. Like that's essentially what you're paying for, right? Like I just need something that works and works well. And I think PyCharm does a very good job at that. You know, on the other hand, VS Code, I kind of was able to customize it more to my aesthetic preferences and like made it my own in terms of like the tools that I was using. And so I started to feel more comfortable in that environment. What VS Code has in contrast to PyCharm, I think, is like a lot of the extensions that it offers, right? So essentially you can recreate pretty much the same features, you know, with slight differences, of course, that you can through PyCharm and VS Code, you know, just by choosing like the right extensions. Like I said, there are some differences, but to a certain extent, it becomes like a matter of aesthetic preferences and just what you would like.
If you were given a choice of IDEs, what are your criteria for selecting one?
Well, number one, who's paying, right? Like if I'm working for a company and they're offering PyCharm, you know, I'm not going to complain. I'll take that. But, you know, if I'm working just by myself on free open source like stuff, then I will probably go with VS Code. You know, actually, like I've been starting to use NeoVim a lot more and recreating a VS Code style and like, you know, through all the plugins that you add through NeoVim. And like that's like another sort of like wormhole of, you know, like different like configurations and environments. Like it's not as user friendly as setting up like VS Code is for sure. If you don't mind like that, like entry barrier, it's so much lighter and easier to use NeoVim in my experience than like setting up a VS Code that's like a little bit bloated. You know, it's a little heavy to like work with because you're working with a lot behind the scenes.
So how do you set up a VS Code? You're getting VS Code out of the box. So for somebody who's new with all of this, how would you go about it?
One of the benefits, I guess, with VS Code is that you can apply the IntelliSense and the autocompletes, if you will, for any language. Whereas like PyCharm mostly just works with like Python, right? Like that's its main focus. So, you know, if you're working on a project that has like multiple different elements, whether it's a web application or running frameworks in other languages, you need that ability to change between languages, and VS Code does allow that, right? So obviously, most importantly, if you're just like talking about Python, then you need the Python extension. If you also want to manage version control through VS Code, then you need those extensions. And you know, you just start building essentially like a list of all the things that you would encounter in going through the project. They have a good GitLens one that, you know, you are able to visualize all the different commits. And if you're working with a project, like that might be really helpful. And, you know, that's something that's like vital to like what you're doing. But you can also make it as basic and as easy as you would like. One feature that VS Code has rolled out recently that actually PyCharm, I wasn't able to find out that they did have, was the dev environments, the dev containers.
What do you mean by that?
It's essentially implementing like a Docker container in the background and being able to run your code through those containers. So like, whereas before you would have, I don't know, like multiple versions of Python through like PyEnv, trying to like manipulate like which one works with one, not the other, and like making sure that you don't mess like with the Python version that your computer is using. Like instead of having to manipulate like all those like considerations, you just like simply run like all your code through an environment. Yeah, VS Code recently came out with like this dev container situation where you just choose the language that you want. And if you want to add something extra to your container, let's say, for example, it has Git integration, or I use Poetry for package management. That's like something that you can add on there, and you can create this container essentially. And it's you run your code through that instead of, you know, having like your local machine.
So in summary, when you choose PyCharm, whether you use the community edition, you have limited functionality, or the fully paid one, you get a lot of stuff out of the box. But the advantage, what I'm getting from you, is that with Visual Studio Code, is that you can actually adjust it to many different languages, not just working for Python. It works for JavaScript, TypeScript, or other programming languages. But you would have to put more effort into upfront, like you have to load the Python extension. You probably have to load the Git extension or the GitHub extension, if there is one. There probably is. And also something for testing and debugging, I'm guessing. Or is this coming with the Python extension as well?
You know, particularly if you use debugging, like if that's like something that's like really important to your workflow, PyCharm also has that out of the box. In my experience, has been like a little bit more effective and powerful than the one that you find through VS Code. But nonetheless, you know, it's still there available in VS Code. Another thing that you asked earlier about, like what I would do to set up VS Code immediately, is the themes. Like it's important for me to
yes,
look at something and have it be comfortable aesthetically. So VS Code does a really good job at integrating like community themes, and, you know, themes that people build. So for example, if you are used to the Nord theme or the Capuchin theme, like that, you know, like you can use in your browser and like all of the other things, you can upload those to your VS Code, and you can put your own fonts. And so like that kind of customization is, I find, really helpful. It just makes my experience a little bit nicer.
And yet, you're thinking about NeoVim. So what makes
yes,
you do that? Well, is it because Microsoft, or is there another reason behind that?
I mean, one for sure, Microsoft. You know, I try to reduce my dependency as much as I can on, you know, like big companies, like supporting their projects. And, you know, if not letting them go, then like charging for them eventually. You know, they're notorious for like, hey, we created this really cool thing for the community, and then, you know, a few months later when everybody's depending on it, it's like, oh, we're gonna charge you $3.99 a month for it. I try to reduce my dependency on like those things as much as I can, but also the bloat, as I mentioned, that comes with like a lot of these softwares. It's not necessary per se for like the tools that you need. So essentially, like recreating the tools that I needed through NeoVim was, as I mentioned, like a little bit of an entry barrier. Like you need to definitely learn how it works and how to load the plugins and, you know, how to the codes and, you know, everything that goes into working within NeoVim, like it is a learning experience for sure. But once you have it set up, I actually find it so much more enjoyable than setting up like a whole VS Code situation. And, you know, for even like the dev container situation, like that I mentioned through VS Code, I was able to recreate like whatever a container I wanted through Docker, just like simply just creating a Docker file. You know, I want a Python 3.11 with poetry and create my Docker file. I just have that image on my local computer and then, you know, just tap into it through NeoVim, no problem.
Just out of interest, I mean, how long does it take you to set this up? So if you started with NeoVim, was it a question of minutes, hours, days?
Like from scratch, like learning, like knowing nothing from NeoVim to like where I am right now, I would say a good week time, you're able to have like a functional environment that works in the way that you want it. But, you know, over time, you start tweaking little things here and there. And it's like, I would say like over, like until you get it, like in a month, you really feel like you're in your flow. Like, for example, like right now, I can set up my NeoVim environment in less than a minute, right? Even like even with a Docker container, like everything set up like exactly how I want. And it looks very similar actually to my VS Code environment. You know, it took me time to figure out how I wanted that to look. So I just really replicated that in a lot of ways.
Well, that sounds great. So what are you currently working on?
I'm in my last semester, as I mentioned, so wrapping up my thesis project and doing final projects for two classes that I'm doing, which is machine learning and cloud computing. So in cloud computing, we're doing data pipelines through the Google Cloud platform, and then machine learning, we're doing transfer learning models using TensorFlow. That's been really interesting and occupying my time for sure. I also wanted to ask you if you had heard of this new IDE that's actually very interesting. It's called Zed.
No, I haven't.
It's barely coming out this year. I think it's still in beta and it's only come out through Mac. So I haven't had a chance to test it out and experience it. But I have like looked into their website and the creators are well known for other projects. So they do have experience in this field. And it's interesting because they implement like a Google Docs sort of situation. So essentially somebody can be working on the same file that you are in the same way, right? Or like let's say, for example, that your manager wants to do like a code review, they can set up a session where they like tune into your environment and like go through your code and you can talk about it in that way. It sounds like a interesting idea. It could take hold or it can just be like another feature that, you know, doesn't really become popular in any way. So just something to look forward to possibly in the future.
Where would people find Zed?
It's called zed.dev as a website. As I mentioned, I think it's only open right now to Mac users, but they're definitely expanding. So hopefully in the near future, you know, everyone will be able to use it.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Well, thanks very much for the tip. And I hope people will look it up. I wish you all the best for your masters. Good luck.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Code for Thought Bite-Sized. The content and the interactive bite-sized RSE sessions are created and run by Jeremy Cohen from Imperial College London and Steve Kraut from Southampton University. The podcast episodes are produced by Peter Schmidt. Finally, we'd like to thank Universe HPC for their continuous support. And with that, goodbye.